Welcome to the Sadler Lectures podcast. Responding to popular demand, I'm converting my philosophy videos into sound files you can listen to anywhere you can take an MP3. If you like what you hear and want to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. I hope you enjoy this lecture. In the third part of his Prolegomena to Any Future Metaphysics, Immanuel Kant is going to clarify for us the relationship between what he calls ideas of reason, which is largely what this part of the work is concerned with, as is very important to metaphysics, and the boundaries or possibilities of experience, something that he has talked quite a lot about and analyzed in sufficient depth and detail in the earlier parts. And so he tells us in these general considerations, it's remarkable that the ideas of reason are of no service to the use of our understanding in experience, but actually quite dispensable. You don't need them in order to make sense of the experience that we have of the world, which, remember, is not just perception, right? Wahrnehmung, but rather judgments of experience, which bring to bear the categories or pure concepts of the understanding that are imposed upon the intuitions, giving us a coherent experience that we have, both exteriorly of the world and interiorly, as we're going to talk about. So he says that they are actually an impediment, these ideas of reason, to the maxims of a rational cognition of nature. We don't actually need them when we're doing, say, pure mathematics, which, as we've seen, is connected to space and time, or even pure natural science. But we are going to need them when it comes to metaphysics. So he says, in another aspect still to be determined, they are necessary. We're going to get to that in just a bit. He's going to reinforce the point by bringing up these three kinds of ideas of reason as examples. So the psychological idea or ideas, he says, whether the soul is or is not a simple substance is of no consequence to us in the explanation of its phenomena. Notice he's not just saying phenomena in general, but the phenomena of the soul. We don't actually need to know whether it is a single, simple substance or not, with all the things that typically go with substance, like, you know, enduring in time, kind of unity. We don't need that in order to make sense out of our experiences. Likewise, we don't need the cosmological ideas Kant is saying. And he's actually saying a little bit more than the text itself is putting forward. He talks about, do we actually need to know the beginning or the eternity of the world in order to make sense of our experience in the world? No, we don't need that. It's not helpful. It actually is getting in the way, right? He says, these cannot be of any service to us for the explanation of any event in the world itself. Now, interestingly, some of the cosmological ideas, you might say, well, wait a second, Kant, you know, what about causes and freedom? And Kant would say, insofar as we're considering the phenomenal, you don't need that. That's just going to get in your way and trip you up. Now, we can think it, and we're going to later on. And then he says, you know, the understanding the nature as the design of nature being drawn from the will of a supreme being, he says, we don't actually need this. This gets in the way as well. This would not be natural philosophy, but an admission that we've come to the end of natural philosophy. Now we're doing theology, whether it's natural or philosophical theology, by comparison to actually studying nature itself. We don't need any of these ideas, psychological, cosmological, or theological. And so, you know, he is going to conclude this by saying the use of the ideas is quite different from that of the categories by which and the principles built upon which experience itself first becomes possible. So what the understanding does doesn't need these ideas of reason. Now, there's a but here. But our laborious analytic of the understanding, would be superfluous if we had nothing else in view than the mere cognition of nature as it can be given in experience. That's an interesting remark now, isn't it? What is the point behind doing this analysis of the understanding? Is it just to do epistemology in a really basic sense? How do we understand things? How do we grasp things out there in the world, in our experience? That's nice, but that isn't its own point or purpose. And so we can ask a deeper question. Well, what is the use, the usefulness, the point of these different ideas of reason? Is it that we've got, you know, well-functioning understanding over here, and then we've got this crazy extra faculty over here that's just kind of doing its own stuff, and we got to make sure they stay separate from each other? Well, Kant is going to tell us that our critique of the understanding combines with the ideas of pure reason for a purpose that lies beyond the empirical use of the understanding. So that holds out the promise that, well, you know, we've got our, let's call it physics over here, and then we've got our metaphysics over here, understanding and reason. And reason is better, it's a higher faculty, and so it's more in tune with, you know, what we are as human beings. This sounds rather Platonic, does it not? And Kant is going to say, whoa, nope, don't go that way. Why not? Well, he says, we have declared the use of the understanding in this respect to be totally inadmissible and without any object or meaning. So we can't effectively drag the understanding beyond the bounds of experience. But we do also have to have what he calls a harmony, Einstimmung, right? A literally having one voice resonating together would work well. A harmony between the, as he calls it, the nature of reason and the understanding. These two faculties can't just be separated off from each other, each of them having their own separate domain. They're interconnected with each other. And so he says that the reason must contribute to the perfection of the understanding, and it cannot possibly upset it. So he says, well, there's a solution to this, an Auflösung, right? So here's how Kant proposes to deal with this. What is it that reason actually does? So it's going to require a completeness, a Vollständigkeit, something we've seen talked about earlier in this section. Each of the three ideas, psychological, cosmological, and theological, is involving completeness or completion of what it is that experience is putting forth, I was going to say providing us with, but what experience is offering, but only partly. So reason requires completeness of the use of the understanding in the complex, the Zusammenhang of experience. So it goes beyond experience. As we saw earlier, this complex of experience is not itself something that we can experience. We can never experience the completion of the world. We can never experience the completion of our soul as substance. We can never experience the completion of the totality of the universe as caused by some intelligent designer or anything like that. So he says that this completeness can be a completeness of principles only, not of intuitions, Anschauungen, or of objects. And here, it's very important. Kant is going to use two different terms that are translated in the English text by objects. Gegenstände, the common use for objects, something that literally stands against us, right, that we could encounter. And then he'll use the term Objekt, which is a little bit more formal, the cognate of our term object, coming from Latin objectum, right? So he's going to go on and say that pure reason, right, doesn't point to particular objects that lie beyond the field of experience, but completeness. And this completeness is of principles, Prinzipien, right? So he says, in order to represent the ideas definitely, though, reason conceives them after the fashion of the cognition of an object, Objekt, not Gegenstand, right? So this is quite important. He says, this is as far as these rules, Regeln, are concerned, completely determined, but the object is only an idea invented for the purpose of bringing the cognition of the understanding as near as possible to the completeness indicated by that idea. So you could say that there is an object, Objekt, for reason, but that object does not correspond to an object that is actually out there, a Gegenstand, that could be encountered within the scope of our experience. It's kind of an empty, open, put whatever content you want in there sort of matter. And he goes on a little bit, and then he's going to talk about noumena in this prefatory remark to the dialectic of pure reason. So he talks about these pure beings of, at first he says, the pure beings of the understanding, or better, beings of thought. These are, in fact, these ideas. And he says that they can't find any intuition which can give them meaning or sense in concreto. They're mere logical functions. They can represent a thing in general, but they cannot themselves give a determinate concept of anything. So these are noumena. Now, Kant has already used the term noumena before in a slightly different sense, where the noumena are not just beings of thought, but would also signify the things in themselves lying behind or beyond the experiential phenomenal world, right? Here, he's saying there isn't something that the noumena, the pure, you know, ideas, pure beings of thought, actually correspond to in that way. He calls these hyperbolic objects. And he talks about, you know, for example, substance, but conceived without permanence in time, or cause, but not acting in time. Predicates that only serve to make the conformity to law of experience possible are applied to these concepts, and yet they are deprived of all the conditions of intuition on which alone experience is possible. So these concepts lose all significance. And then he talks about this possibility of the understanding going beyond its range. Now, the understanding by itself isn't going to do that. What causes it to do that? So he talks about alien laws. Where would these alien laws come from? Reason. When reason, which cannot be fully satisfied with any empirical use of the rules of the understanding, is always being conditioned, requires a completion. We saw that that is what is involved in these ideas of reason. Reason requires a completeness or completion. When reason requires a completion of this chain of conditions, then the understanding is forced, or we might even say dragged, out of its sphere. There is this close connection, you know, what he's called a harmony before that, between reason and the understanding. The understanding would never go wrong if reason wasn't there in some way to say, hey, let's go check this out. Let's go beyond the, you know, limits of experience. And understanding is like, well, I'm not sure if I'm supposed to do that. And then reason is like, oh, come on, let's just go see what's up, you know, out there available to us. And then understanding is like, well, okay, I guess I'll go along with you. Sort of like a little brother getting dragged along into doing the wrong thing by an older brother who's supposed to be looking after him, right? So he goes on and he says that reason partly represents objects of experience in a series so extended no experience can grasp it. It's seeks entirely beyond experience, noumena, to which it can attach that chain. And so, having at last escaped from these conditions of experience, reason makes its hold complete. Kant then identifies what these are. These are the transcendental ideas, which may aim not at extravagant concepts, but at an unbounded extension of their empirical use. But they seduce the understanding by an unavoidable illusion to a transcendent use, which, though deceitful, cannot be restrained within the bounds of experience, but only by scientific instruction and with much difficulty. The only thing that can keep reason from, you know, misleading the understanding in this way is reason carrying out a critical analysis of itself in this sort of case, which is what the critique of pure reason is. Reason is being applied to reason and all the other faculties and saying, okay, this is legitimate, this is not. Watch out for this sort of illusion. So this is how we wind up with these transcendental ideas that Kant is now, in the rest of this section, going to analyze further for us. Special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible. You can find me on Twitter at Philosopher70, on YouTube at the Gregory B. Sadler channel, and on Facebook on the Gregory B. Sadler page. Once again, to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. Above all, keep studying these great philosophical works.